for the labor movement and how people prevailed. Although it took a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, they stuck together and they really did prevail. And so it's a great film.
And I think, too, that's for me, Tina, what feels to be missing now is that stick-togetherness. Because if you heard me mention when I first started talking about our brother who came from Colombia, I mean, the title of his presentation, No Longer Shackled by Chains but by Our Economic Conditions. That's been our story since we got here. So we need to come together as working folks and break those shackles.
Yeah. And so with tonight's show entitled Reflections, again, what we wanted to do was to talk about the core values and talk about the struggles of not just here, but it's happening on a different plane. To remind you that all in all, when all the work is done and the dust is settled, that when you have good union jobs, you are increasing the middle class. You're enabling people to maintain not only their family life, but a life of dignity. And then the second segment, being able to reach out and talk and make the struggles of those who have nothing and to help them achieve. Yes. At a level that we as union workers have been able to achieve. Yes. And then we have the heart piece, where we talk about solidarity, mm-hmm. about coming together, about not looking at color lines. And so, again, tonight I'd like to thank you for joining us in our half hour of reflection in this month of December. Now, Audrey has an announcement.
I just want to say that as president of the NAACP, so much is going on in Portland, and the East Coast has kind of recognized a lot of the things that we've been doing, especially through radio, through television, and a lot of other things. So they've asked us, the Portland unit, to host the Alaska, Oregon, and Washington State Conference, and that will be Saturday from 8 to 5 at the Emmanuel Church, 1035 North Sumner, here in Portland. And we will be talking about, we got a panel of some very strong people on talking about education. And a couple of people on that panel will be Lorenzo Poe from the district. There will be Karen Edwards, the president of PCC.
Oh, the Cascade Campus.
Yes, awesome. She's agreed to come. I'm excited awesome. About that. And awesome. Then another subject matter, we'll be talking about social justice. And I've asked for Captain Mohican to come. He will be there. Kevin Hall will be one of the persons on the panel, and Pastor Minnie Weather, because of the social justice he's doing in the city. But I'm just saying that it's going to be Saturday, December the 6th at Emmanuel Church. There's a lot going on in this city, and the eyes are on us. And I'm just so proud to be here with Tina and Deborah and watching making these things happen. It's encouraging to me.
So, brothers and sisters, it's that witching hour once again. Actually, it's the witching half hour. And again, I'd like to thank you for joining us for our segment of Labor Radio. Again, this is the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists. I'd like to remind you, we meet every second Tuesday of the month at the American Federation of State County Municipal Building. It's called the William Lucy Building, located at 6025 East Burnside. I'm here in Portland. Come out and join us. We start at 6 o'clock. And again, thank you very much. Holla.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Be a part of Giving Tuesday on December 2nd A day that inspires personal philanthropy and encourages bigger, better, and smarter charitable giving during the holiday season. KBOO is excited to participate, and we have a $5,000 match for the month of December. All new memberships and additional donations made by current members will be matched. If you gave $60 last year and decide to give $100, it will be matched for the $40 increase. If you give monthly and give an additional one-time gift, that amount will be matched. Go to kboo.fm/give to make your donation now. And thank you to the Juan Young Trust, Vernier Software, SSI Shredding Systems, and the Wendy Foundation for empowering KBOO with their matching contributions. Thank you for your support.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. I'm Amy Johnson. Tonight we are discussing decriminalizing homelessness. I'm speaking with Portland area activists Monica Beamer and Ibrahim Mubarak. Ibrahim is known for founding a rest area for homeless folks in the downtown Portland area called Right to Dream 2. They are both working as part of the Western Regional Advocacy Project on the Homeless Bill of Rights campaign. I asked them to explain their involvement and work with the houseless community.
I work at KBOO now, but I worked for 12 years at Sisters of the Road, which is a founding member of the Western Regional Advocacy Project, which is West Coast groups who are doing social justice work around housing justice and homelessness, homeless rights, and a lot of groundbreaking work around the criminalization of people who are experiencing homelessness, the houseless community. We work together in that way as core members, and I'm on the board of directors for Western Regional Advocacy Project.
I'm Ibrahim Mubarak. I travel a lot throughout this country and some in other countries, and I always visit the shelters when I went to a different state or city because I knew there would be a place for me to stay. And after I got productive, I would leave and go to another city and do the same thing. So for about 25 to 30 years, I've been traveling in and out of the houseless community. But something struck me odd here in Portland, how they had abundance of people in one congested area and none of them was building communities or getting productive. So I decided to become an activist and join with other houseless people to create something where we can address issues concerning houselessness. I formed Dignity Village, Right Survive, Right to Dream 2, and became a member of Western Regency Advocacy Project and Solidarity with Sister the Rose Cafe.
And Street Roots. Street Roots is the other.
Yeah, we can't leave Street Roots out because they lent their vendors out. Matter of fact, it was two of their vendors that helped me to form Dignity Village. So Street Roots was a big...
Those are the three members of Western Regional Advocacy Project in Portland. And then there's groups throughout California as well. But RAP, we call it RAP, Western Regional Advocacy Project, is also supporting homeless bill of rights that are popping up all over the country because it's actually a national movement to fight the criminalization of the houseless community. So it's actually broader than that, but core members are on the West Coast. Everything that we do at RAP is based in asking folks who are on the street, what's happening to you, what's important to you, what do you want us to do? And so we did 1,300 interviews really across the country, but found incredibly similar things about what was happening, people's experience of being criminalized for sleeping, getting tickets for sleeping, criminalized for standing, or it's loitering, I guess is the legal term, criminalized for feeding each other across the country. Actually sharing food has become a criminal act more and more. And sleeping in cars, which is a really safe alternative, as Ibrahim was saying, folks coming together helps people be safe. Being in a car is safe, but it's illegal. We asked people what's important to you, and we based our homeless bill of rights on the 1,300 interviews and what people said was most important to them. And we're finding this criminalization of people who are poor and homeless happening across the country. A lot of it is led by what's called business improvement districts. So the motivation being to get people out of sight, including in rural areas. Roseburg Business Improvement District is leading some of this. To be a RAP member, you have to be based in the community and asking folks what's most important. I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, and doing it, a criminalization, and I'm glad this is a topic that most people don't talk about. They talk about mass incarceration of people in jails. They talk about homelessness, but they don't see how that intertwine with one another. If you have a criminal record here in this country, it's hard for you to find work and find housing. So where do you go? To the streets. And so when they send all those people that are houseless are criminals, to a certain aspect, they're all right, but the people are getting criminalized for exercising their human, civil, and constitutional rights. I mean, sooner or later, you have to fall asleep, and I guess it's where you fall asleep at. Can't fall asleep in your car because it's against the law. You can't fall asleep on the sidewalk against the building because it's against the law. You get criminalized. And that's the reason for the Homeless Bill of Rights, giving people that human right, which is resting. I mean, you can do all the things you want to do and try to stop from sleeping, but sooner or later, you're going to fall asleep.
And one of the things that RAP also does that's important is to put this targeting and this criminalizing of people who are homeless into a historical context, looking at other groups that have been criminalized throughout history with things like ugly laws, Jim Crow laws, you know, making sure that we know that this is a tactic we've seen before. This is one of the newest groups, certainly not the only group that's being criminalized now. We travel around, have discussions like, what is the motivation for criminalizing various groups? You know, racist and classist laws that target folks for controlling folks for moving them about and, putting them in prison and jail.
And how is it manifesting here in the Portland area? From what I know, people are being pushed to the outer edges of the Portland area. But then, of course, we have some examples where people are able to stay downtown. What's going on here in this area?
Well, it's like Monica said, you have your Annie Oakley laws, the sundown laws, the Jim Crow laws, the ugly laws, and we know by being American, by being raised up in this country, that we don't like nothing ugly, you know, per se what they say. You know, you have this nice car, but then they make a beautiful car the next year, and you have to get that car. So to the general population, the public, that homelessness is an ugly scar on American society itself. And so when you become houseless and living out there, then they want to get rid of that ugly indentation or that ugly mark against this beautiful country that it's supposed to be. So in order to do that, you have to come up with something that would make the public say, oh yeah, it's right to get rid of them, to push them off the edge. You turn them into criminals. You impose unjust laws on their rights, their constitutional and civil rights.
And moving folks around. I mean, one of the things about right to dream is that it's a private property that the landowner has shared with the folks to build. And so because of that, it's out of reach for moving people along because they're protected by that private property, ironically. But we know that, and so it's important, and it's a statement, right? So they'll try and use other laws to get people out of sight and out of mind. And also another group that is criminalized is activists. Ibrahim was arrested recently for being downtown and helping folks out. So that's something also that's important to track, because you're definitely not supposed to also stand up for people's rights, as we've seen all around the country, and more people being criminalized for videotaping what's happening, for standing up for people's rights. So all of this is just really important to talk about. In the 1,300 interviews, we asked folks, do you think that you have been ticketed because of your economic status? And 76% said yes. Because of your race, 37% said yes. Gender, 25%, and disability, 25%. And do police sometimes harass you without using the law? 70% said yes to that. Mm-hmm. So we know that it's a movement. It's not only about laws. It's about, as Ibrahim said, creating awareness that this is happening and building solidarity against targeting folks because our society and the current economic system we live within is incredibly violent and creates all of this disparity and homelessness. And yet a lot of mainstream media would have us blaming individuals. And so Homeless Bill of Rights campaign is movement building. The bill, the right to rest, is a part of it. But most importantly, we're having conversations that help all of us understand this dynamic and stand up against it. In big fronts and small fronts.
Exactly. So. And in the movement building that Monica spoke about, we have Washington, Colorado, California, and Oregon working together in collaboration on the Homeless Bill of Rights. And there's, I call it like tripod state or whatever. And we're working and trying to establish decriminalization for people that's been affected by this economic crunch and homelessness. A group in Seattle is the anti-criminalization group that did a survey. And I found out this morning that they added 497 more outreach.
And they're doing street outreach in Detroit. Yeah. And we did about, I think, 600 here in Portland.
Yeah.
We're trying to do statewide, too, because it's a statewide campaign in Bell.
The ugly laws are something that I hadn't heard about until I was researching this, and I found it really disturbing what it was. So I wondered if you could explain what the ugly laws
are. Yeah, ugly laws from the 1860s to the 1970s. Several American cities had laws that made it illegal for people with unsightly or disgusting, in quotation marks, disabilities. That was the wording in the law, to appear in public. And yeah, so we just make sure we talk about all these anti-Oki laws.
Oh yeah, that was another one I hadn't known about. Yeah.
Sundown towns, operation. I just, some of the words I don't even like to say because they're so racist and horrible. But it's really important to put it in the context of, this isn't new, right? It's a tool used by capitalism to criminalize certain folks, blame them for their circumstances, even though the economy itself creates these circumstances and make it acceptable, as Ibrahim was saying, in the general public's eyes, to target folks. So our role is to say, hey, this just doesn't make any sense. Also, one of our arguments in our right to rest bill is that it's expensive to criminalize homelessness. All the money that you spend ticketing folks for simply for being poor, because if you're ticketing folks for sleeping outside, you're ticketing them for being poor, could go towards housing, actually. And then the complications, as you mentioned, of when you get ticketed and you have that on your record or you can't pay, how that gets in the way of a job or housing in the future. It's just really important to talk about.
The anti-Oki laws, I didn't know about at all.
In 1937, California passed an anti-Oki law, which made it a misdemeanor to bring or assist in bringing extremely poor people into the state. And the law was later considered unconstitutional. So,
and the sundown towns, people who were ethnic minorities were not allowed to be in the towns after sundown.
Yes.
So it's definitely showing that there is that historical context. I think that that's something that people would be disturbed by, and then to see that that's what we're doing right now to folks that, due to economic circumstances or other reasons, aren't able to have a house to put their head in.
Well, a lot of times when they do sweeps against the camps, they say it's for people's own good or their health or sight people's health, when really people are choosing to be together for their safety and health. Or they call them quality of life laws. So they use these euphemisms that are about, targeting a certain group of people, usually around economic status. So,
if they were, you wouldn't have people sleeping on the streets, nowhere to go, and being criminalized for having nowhere to go. And also, you would have like hygiene centers, or you would have places where people can take showers and baths and leave their stuff where they can seek to be productive more. So they don't have these things because they encounter that once you become homeless and you criminalize, you're never going to get back on your feet.
You're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Amy Johnson with my guests, Monica Beamer and Ibrahim Mubarak. We are discussing the Western Regional Advocacy Project's Homeless Bill of Rights campaign. We're discussing the current status of the bill in Oregon.
The bill part of the campaign is broader than the bill, but the bill is called the Right to Rest Bill, and so we're working to bring that to the legislature in this upcoming session, which is taking place February through July. We're working with senators and some other folks to bring that forward. basically, it's pulling out the most important things that we've heard: the right to move freely, the right to sleep, the right to sleep in a parked vehicle, and the right to exchange and eat food. We're focusing on those because those were the most cited. And we found in California, when we had hygiene centers, which was also super important, it was denied in the assembly because it's expensive. So we're going to pull that out as a separate fight so that we can say, of these four things, actually, if you pass this, it'll save money. So it can't be killed by the false austerity laws that are happening right now, or movements towards austerity that are not real, because there's more money happening right now. It's just not being passed around for the public, not being shared. So that's what's happening. So if folks want to get involved or find out more about that, they can go to wraphome.org or wraphome.org is the email.
Portland passed a law a year and a half ago that you can sleep in your car. It's just the neighborhoods and the public is fighting against it. So a lot of people don't sleep in their cars because it's unsafe. People may break your window or tag your car or spray paint it. And it's also legal for the faith-based community to let two or three people sleep on their lot, but they have to go through the church, and then they have to go through the neighborhood association. And neighborhood association, you know, I don't want to badmouth nobody, but they not understanding until one of them is affected. Then they want to say, I need help. So with doing this homeless bill of rights and doing this campaign, that people hopefully can go to those websites that Monica mentioned and see how are we doing and how are we trying to help. And I know somebody that live inside knows someone that live outside where they can help.
It was an important and powerful process to watch as Right to Dream built their community, their rest area in the neighborhood, Old Town Chinatown. At first, the neighborhood was against it, and they just did such a great job of building relationship and building solidarity with the communities down there that they really won over folks. And the very first meeting was so full of really like stereotyping, and they were saying all these things were happening that was definitely not Right to Dream: breaking windows, dirty sidewalks, defecating on sidewalks. And it wasn't Right to Dream, but it, because of classism, they didn't even, it just, people were assuming it was, when they actually are ones to help keep the neighborhood safe and clean, and they have bathrooms and help to talk to folks that are having a hard time and de-escalate things. They did some nonviolence trainings and really, you know, guidelines. It's a community that's run by the members, and guidelines about how to be together to keep everybody safe. So the community in that neighborhood was really won over by what great neighbors that they are.
And so the Old Town Chinatown and the neighborhood liaison between the police and the neighborhood did a study and found out that crime didn't excel. It either stayed the same or went down a tad bit since we've been there. Oh. And that goes to show me that the people are not the problem. The problem's the problem. And that's what we got to try to solve, that problem on why people can't afford housing or they losing their housing, why are people being criminalized. And hopefully with this Homeless Bill of Rights campaign, we can reach those goals and bring that awareness out and let people know that just because you see somebody living on the street, they ain't create that problem, they inherit that problem.
There's also a book that we should mention, a new book. And folks can go to that website, wraphome.org, and find out more about it. But it celebrates 30 years of organizing by Paul Bowden, who's the director and founder of Western Regional Advocacy Project and San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness. One of the great things about WRAP is that we use artwork. As you can see, if you go to the website, there's artists working with us to help to tell the story of what we're fighting for, our vision, and what we're fighting against, the violence. So folks should check that out.
Yeah, and the name of that book is House Keys, Not Handcuffs.
I definitely see that there's a connection between people who are released from prison and ending up in homelessness. And I just wondered from your guys' work if you had seen that, and maybe if you could explain how and why that happens.
People just being released from prison or just being released from jails, or people that's on parole or probation that can't find the proper housing because of their criminal record. We find that a lot in the houseless community. Also that their awareness or track of time or dates on going to court and stuff is not there, because people think about, I need to get some proper rest so I can function right, and then to eat, and then once they get that, they can function. But without that proper rest or functioning right, they may be liable to forget their name or something, because sleep deprivation turns into mental illness. So within that criminal, people being released from jails or prison, it's a lot of that. And I think that's where people are get afraid of sin, because they full of criminals. But if you don't have no place for them to, you know, do right or to get back on their feet, where are they going to go? You know, in this country, it used to be you do wrong, you pay your debts to society, you're forgiven, you can get back on your feet. But now they're not allowing that to happen. They're keeping you down. And I think it's a control mechanism. And this country is definitely turning from capitalism to imperialism, where it's making people dependent on you. And so if you can do free criminal slave houseless labor, why not criminalize a person for exercising the houseless right? I mean, they human rights. Right, where they have to do community service and go clean up the streets instead of paying somebody to clean up the streets, where if you pay that person, they can buy their, get them an apartment or a house, and that's one, at least one person off the street.
I think there's really strong connections between the prison industrial complex and homelessness in so many ways. As Ibrahim's saying, another group that's really targeted is people who have a criminal record or have been incarcerated is another group that we target and criminalize even after their incarceration. And one of the ways to do that is that checking a box when they're trying to get jobs, checking a box that says they have a criminal record, even if it has nothing to do with what they would be doing or the nature of what they did. And of course, the incredible classism and racism of the prison industrial complex, who gets ticketed, who gets arrested, who gets focused on. And then also, I mean, let's just be real. The average rent in Portland, Oregon is $1,500 a month now. And pay is going down and down. Productivity is going up and up, and pay is going down and down again in this false austerity, because those wages are being taken and being, you know, stolen at the top. That's when you're taking away benefits and you're taking away pay, but you're having higher profits that's stealing from the people's work. And so people have to have two or three jobs just to make ends meet, and then just trying to find affordable housing, you know, it's just a situation that's a disaster. And it doesn't make any sense. There's systems we could create that make so much more sense, that take care of the planet and the people. So that's what we're working toward.
And also the connection between criminalization and mass incarceration in jails and stuff with houselessness is that a lot of people self-medicate, and a lot of crimes are drug crimes. Instead of throwing people into jail for 30 to 90 days and let them back out, and they haven't did nothing to address their drug habits, then they create that crime and crime again. And I believe, and I don't think I'm speaking just by myself, that if you have more treatment center and bring out mental health things again, you'll have less criminalization and crimes and people doing drugs on the streets, where you can't criminalize them also. So you need to put the real criminals in there. Being on drugs, your mind is not there. You're on drugs or something. So I think you need more treatment centers, and I don't think jails should be the new treatment center or the new shelters.
We house people who have mental illness on the street or in prisons, and it's unacceptable.
What are some things that are happening here that are good, or things that you'd like to see happening here in the area to help folks out?
I would like to see affordable be real affordable, not just for affordable for a social, for a certain wage class, but for no income to low income affordable there. They, you talking about this housing first and these tiny houses. It's a good thing, but in the housing first, they need preparation in order to get into these houses because they used to doing things on their own. They're not used to filling out maintenance repair requests or building community, living in community, living and stuff. And that's where places like Right to Dream 2 would come in, where you can build community and we can get educated on how to budget, do your laundry, pick the right food. We have Food Not Bombs coming in instead of eating unhealthy food and stuff like that. Also, that I think is going to be an influx of young middle class children going to buy these cheap tiny houses and a houseless to no income. It's not going to be able to afford it. I mean, reality, who are you going to rent to? Somebody that's struggling on the street or somebody that's come from a middle class that can pay that money? And I think they're going to take over that and we're going to be stuck in concentration camps and stuff waiting to get a tiny house.
I mean, that's happening. There are cities that have folks who are homeless behind fences.
Yeah. Wow, really?
Yeah. And the problem is really deep. We could say restore housing funding, and I think that, of course, we need to. But we need to look at the basic system that we operate within and the presumptions behind it and what it values. And I just don't think it's what people value. And I don't. I believe that there are... How many people on the planet now? 7 billion almost. 7 billion people who don't benefit from this system, and the planet certainly doesn't. So we really need to like just be really creative right now and put all our energy towards creating a different way of being. Part of that is going to be that everyone should have a house. It's a human right. Everyone should have safety. Everyone should have treatment if they need it. People shouldn't be targeted because of the color of their skin or disability or gender. RAP has been groundbreaking in studying how we created the epidemic of homelessness with massive cuts to affordable housing on the federal level, how there was not shelter system before these massive cuts, which started in 1989. The Without Housing report talks about these massive cuts and again uses artwork to talk about basically switching to people, those of us who own a house and write off our mortgage that was created. So basically switched from supporting those with 0 to 30% income to those who